you know, the day in my daily and weekly routine, I hear a lot of talk amongst coworkers about investment, good investment, bad investment, what the market is doing, and things like that. And there's usually a lot of nuance and granularity to these discussions about how to evaluate market performance and determine really what's the best way to try and get ahead and try and win the day. And when I hear this talk get more and more complicated about the various nuances of what's going on with the market, I think back to what a mentor of mine used to say when a discussion like this would start to really get complicated. He would say, whatever happened to buy low, sell high? Very simple concept. And that usually ended all the complex discussion, but you know, who really could argue with that? Very simple concept, but very, very hard in practice. Last week, I think I learned through a fictitious story about the Messiah being born in Ginny's barn that any association with my family could land you on a terror watch list. If you weren't here last week, go to stjameskansas.org, listen to the last two homilies, it'll make more sense. But I'll ease your mind. I've had multiple background checks performed on me for my job because I have to have access to marine shipping facilities and TSA pre-check, things like that. You don't need to worry. And I won't steal Father Randy's thunder if he's planning on writing part three of the story around Easter time. But I've often pondered how the story of the Messiah would play out if it did happen today. And I've thought about it since I was very young, and I usually come to the same conclusion that even with everything that we know about the story of Jesus, and even if we had that history to learn from the first time around, I still think it would not play out much differently today. Though I doubt it would end in crucifixion, that hasn't been practiced for a long time, ultimately Jesus, challenger of the existing political and religious ruling elites, champion of the marginalized, the one who preaches to meet those with bad intentions by turning the other cheek, the one who tells us that our only weapon is forgiveness and that vengeance only belongs to God. Such a person would meet a fate no less violent and horrifying than the one he met the first time. A human with the audacity to challenge those in power and to bring hope to the powerless. How long does anyone think that would be allowed to go on? Nothing threatens people in power more than the thought of transferring their power to those who don't have it. The more power they have, the more they stand to lose, and the more threatening Jesus becomes. He comes to shatter that illusion that anybody has the power to marginalize you. Nobody has that power if you conquer your fear. And so even though this violent destiny is a foregone conclusion, so is the victory. But I'll let Randy tell you how it plays out in Northwest Ohio. Tomorrow is Martin Luther King Day. And on April 3rd, 1968, Martin Luther King gave a speech where he said, "I don't know what will happen now, but we've got some difficult days ahead. It really doesn't matter with me now because I've been to the mountaintop, and I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place, but I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And he's allowed me to go up the mountain, and I've looked over and I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord." And the next morning, he was violently shot to death. Rather than worry about what he needed to do to preserve his life on earth, he gave his life to Jesus that evening, and he did so without fear. The gospel talks of the opportunity to meet Jesus of Nazareth and those who do proclaim to have found the Messiah. If only it were so easy. Whether we all knew it at the time, we've all met him at some point too. What did we do when we met him? Has anyone ever felt a calling like Samuel was called, or like Moses, or like Paul, Abraham, Isaiah, any of them, like the disciples in the gospel today who bore witness to the Messiah? I think you have. Here today we have teachers who provide knowledge necessary on the path to independence and adulthood, coaches who mentor young people to find the strength within themselves to be successful, paramedics, firefighters, nurses, those who care for those in situations where they cannot care for themselves or respond to the circumstances of an emergency situation that they're in. Those of you who give their time and efforts to help those less fortunate in our outreach ministries and who support God's storehouse. We come here for about an hour a week, but I think the Hulls are here for about 8 days a week, making sure that the place is ready for all that we ask of it. These things are callings, and these are the answers that we have to these calls. These are the kind of things that are so important to us, so ingrained in our nature, that they take priority over fear of what might happen if we took a risk in the name of our calling. In our answer to these calls, we demonstrate that we know how to conquer fear in a tactical way, but we have a long way to go before we overcome the fear that can control our cultural lives. When I look at all the things that go on in society, a lot of it starts to make more sense if I consider the role that fear is playing. When I talk to people about how they vote, I hear people describing their fears. Sometimes it can be easy to figure out how somebody will vote just by asking the question, what is going to cause the end of the world? How a person answers that question likely predicts how they will vote. One might say climate change will cause it. Another will say terrorism. Another might say economic collapse. Another say it will be reckless use of military power. Another may say that the loss of moral values will cause the downfall of our society. How this question is answered provides a window into people's fears and is a pretty accurate predictor of how they'll vote. It may make us uncomfortable to talk about it, so I won't talk about it too much. But I guarantee you, the people trying to get you to vote a certain way are talking about how they think you will answer that question, whether we talk about it here or not. Ask a voter what would cause the end of the world in the early 80s, it was going to be the Soviets. They were going to nuke us into oblivion if we didn't rise to meet that threat. Today we're told by the people in power that the Russians, the former Soviets, aren't in fact our mortal enemies, but they're our friends who share economic interests with us. Who knew? Has Oceania always been at war with East Asia or Eurasia? I can't keep up. If you've read 1984, that makes more sense than if you haven't. But even if you haven't, I challenge everyone to just observe the media, not as a participant in the events of the day, but instead as an observer of our culture, and consider how everything being covered is meant to address the fears that we and our peers struggle with. We think of Jesus as a friend, and we know that he loves us, and we take great comfort in that love. Yet we may not like the things he would tell us about ourselves and the way that we may be letting fear dominate our lives and our decisions. Does anyone remember something that occurred back in the late 80s, early 90s called the Satanic Panic? I don't know how much attention it got here. I didn't live here at the time, but many members of the popular media format of the day included talk show hosts like Oprah Winfrey, Jerry Springer, Sally, Jesse, Raphael, others, played a part in stoking fears, whether there was any basis for it or not. During this time, Satanists, we were told, were lurking all around us and engaging in ritual sacrifice. The message was meant to keep you glued to your TV set. The Satanists could be your neighbors. They could be your children's caregivers. You, your children, and your pets weren't safe. And you couldn't learn about it by watching the mainstream news. The talk show hosts were the only people talking about it. You had to tune into them to learn what you needed to know to keep you and your family safe. The Satanic Panic resulted in a high-profile shutdown of a daycare center in California. After an investigation and trial that spanned 7 years and over $15 million, no criminal convictions were obtained. All charges were dropped in 1990. The family who ran the daycare center had lost their family business as well as their standing in the community. In 1993, three young boys were murdered in West Memphis, Arkansas. The teenage boys who came to be known as the West Memphis Three were tried and convicted in 1994. There was little tangible evidence placing them at the scene of the crime, but the accused had disciplinary issues and were also known to listen to heavy metal music, which wasn't mainstream in that community in that era. When the lyrics to a song called Sanitarium by Metallica were found written in the notebook of one of the accused, that was enough to consider he and his friends to be troubled kids who were capable of doing very bad things. In 2011, they were released. This was after a 2010 decision by an Arkansas Supreme Court regarding newly produced DNA evidence and potential juror misconduct, and it was ruled significant enough to call the evidence in their conviction into question. To me, there is little difference between the crowds that took down the McMartin daycare in California and the crowds that took down the West Memphis teenagers and wrongly convicted them of a horrific murder, and the crowds who gave in to panic and yelled, "Crucify him." It is all the same hysteria. People getting caught up in the complexities of what threatens the status quo when the simple question is, whatever happened to buy low, sell high? Whatever happened to, when I was a stranger, you invited me into your home? Whatever happened to love your neighbor as yourself? Events like these are examples of voting our fears. We vote against our own definition of the apocalypse every day. Whatever looks like that must be taken out, where we make decisions not based on pursuit of justice, but on desire to alleviate fear and eliminate perceived threats. And they aren't just in the past. Today it's not the Soviets or the Satanists or the headbangers. It's foreigners like Mexicans or members of other faiths such as Islam that are threats, so we're told. The media format has evolved, and it will continue to evolve. Yesterday it was talk shows. Today it's cable news, talk radio, social media. Take your pick. And they tell you that the mainstream isn't talking about it. No, you have to tune in to their special programming and stay glued to it if you really want to learn the truth. Tomorrow it will be something else. How on earth can we hear his call with all of this ridiculous noise? Think of the opportunity that the disciples had in the gospel today. The opportunity to see Jesus, recognize him, and declare him the Messiah. He would come to tell them, "Come, you who are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the creation of the world. For I was hungry, and you fed me. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me into your home. I was sick, and you cared for me. I was in prison, you visited me. When you did it to the least of these, my brothers and sisters, you were doing it for me." When we hear the call, do we answer? "When I was hungry, did you feed me? I'm of Mexican descent, born in the United States. When my parents were deported, what did you do? When I was labeled a hostile threat with no tangible evidence other than I come from a Muslim country, what did you do?" We can get into all the political nuances of these questions, or we can say, whatever happened to buy low, sell high? So simple a concept, yet so hard in practice. Not unlike the call of Jesus. Whatever happened to when I was a stranger, you invited me. Whatever happened to love your neighbor as yourself? Will we hear it? What will we do? How will we answer? Easy to ask, hard to answer. Martin Luther King Jr. gave his life to Jesus that evening when he was said he was afraid. All he wanted was to do, or he said he was not afraid, and that all he wanted to do was God's will. We live in challenging times. How do we answer the call today? We can't answer if we don't hear. The answer isn't on your TV or on the radio or on your smartphone. The answer is here. We have to turn off the noise and say, "Speak, Lord, I'm listening." Do we have the courage to actually just shut up and listen? Do we have the courage to let God have the pen that will write our story?